From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deckett. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Now, Matt,
yeah.
You and I are unfortunately pursuing the third in a series of episodes related to an ongoing event.
Yes, we are. An event that will continue to go on probably forever.
I don't know. It's interesting. We'll see. This is the third part in our continuing series on the origin, rise, fall, life, and ultimately death of one Jeffrey Edward Epstein. And not to be cold about this, nor too abstract, but we have to consider that this is one of the first events of its kind to take place in a world of with the current surveillance and communication technology that we have available, and these are modern days. If this sort of thing occurred in the 50s or the 60s, 1950s, 1960s, to say nothing of the 1850s or 1860s, then it would have been forgotten. It would have already been buried, right?
Yeah, we're in an era where something like this can continue to be discussed, even if it is not making the mainstream news cycles. But we do have 24-hour mainstream news cycles now, and it continues to pop up in those as well.
And it is continually covered in those news cycles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said. If you would like to learn more about Jeffrey Epstein's early life, his rise to power, and the first time he was apprehended, then go ahead and listen to our January episode, available wherever you find podcasts or your favorite dark off the map shows. I believe the title of that is How Jeffrey Epstein Broke the Law and Got Away.
I believe so, or yeah. Something very similar to that. And then we made another episode while we were away. I think we were in Orlando maybe when we made that second episode.
Part of it at least.
Immediately following the death of Jeffrey Epstein in August 2019. We talked about his time in prison, the initial reports of his death, and you can find that one again wherever you find your podcasts.
So here are the facts. Just for a quick recap, who is Jeffrey Epstein? For anyone who has been under a rock for not the country, but a rock, R-O-C-K, for the past several years, or anyone who has not been an exploited victim of his, of which there are many, some of whom may be listening to today's show.
Yes. J.E. Epstein was born in Brooklyn, that's New York, on January 20th, 1953. His parents were Pauline and Seymour Epstein. They had married just the year before he was born. Now, originally, he was working as a teacher at this place, a very private and prestigious place called the Dalton School or Dalton School. And later, he was given an entry-level position at a place you may recall or you may have heard of before called Bear Stearns, an investment firm. Mm-hmm. And that is remarkable for a lot of reasons, but one of the main reasons is that he was, in fact, a college dropout that was given a position there and then ended up doing some climbing because he rose to prominence as this guy that we kind of have learned about more recently, who was a jet setter, a guy who had multiple properties, millions and millions of dollars worth of properties. He met all kinds of high-profile people. He gathered a group of friends that included presidents and royalty and just people across the Western world. And they were people that were financial clients of his, some of them just friends, but a lot of them actually had money tied in with his dealings.
Well, that we don't know. That gets a little – this is the here are the facts part.
He at least – you're right. This is the here are the facts part. He at least had personal relationships with those people.
Yeah.
Who were at high levels in countries across the world.
Right. The mastermind of Victoria's Secret is one of his few known clients. But he was famous or infamous in the world of finance for not revealing who his clients were, to the point where, in the absence of transparency, speculation proliferated and people were saying, is this guy dealing with warlords? Is this guy dealing with people who have been, in one way or another, exiled from the international banking system? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it turns out that there may be some sand to those claims, but at this point, we can't call them facts because they remain unproven, although he was caught with like loose diamonds.
Yeah.
40-something loose diamonds, which is, I think as we mentioned in the earlier episode, it's such a sketchy billionaire thing to do.
Oh, it is. And we know that in the least, a lot of the people he's been connected with did end up making a flight or a helicopter trip or a, you know, a yacht mm-hmm. trip out to his private island in the Caribbean.
Right, right. And his main private island, because he had two, as we found out.
Well, yeah, he ended up right at the end there purchasing. So he owned Little St. James Island, which is the one you've probably seen recently in the news, or maybe a video of it that mm-hmm. has just come out that we're going to talk about at the end of this episode. But he also, right towards the end there, while he was in jail, right before and then as he was in jail, purchased the immediately adjacent island, Big St. James Island.
Which is something you can do if you are a billionaire yourself or, you know, forget that. If you are friends with billionaires, you can do that kind of thing. And his list of clients, you know, it wasn't just he wasn't just hanging out with the Donald Trumps of the world. He was hanging out with the Bill Clintons of the world because, again, when you get to that level of money and power – you learn very quickly that what is sold to the rest of us as two starkly opposed ideologies ultimately end up being fingers on a hand, right?
Yeah.
Your thumb may be opposable, but it's still your thumb.
Very true.
The opposition is not what it appears to be.
P.S. It was called Great St. James Island.
Great St. James.
Not Big
St. James. Big. It was not just big. It was great. So – fast forward, there's a turn here in this guy's closely guarded jet-setting life. We should also say he has a lot of members of government, not just the U.S. government, but members of different governments messing with him, including, of course, the royalty of the U.K., which are for some reason still around. If Epstein's primary day job was finance – He appeared to be like one of those, you know, one of those people. We've probably all met someone like this in our lives who has a job that they, you know, they do, they show up, but their real love, their real passion is some sort of hobby, right? Someone who loves deep sea fishing so much. They're just clocking in their hours so they can get back on their boat and go hunting swordfish or whatever.
Sure. I'm like that with podcasting. I can't wait to get home and just play a video game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're just doing this to support your video game habit.
That's
right?
What this whole thing's about.
Right, right. Right. And for Paul, it's visiting every Applebee's
yep.
on the planet. And for me, you know, it's getting into the DPRK. But those are three pretty innocent hobbies we just named.
I mean, he really wants to like get into it.
So Epstein's hobby, if he had something like this, it turned out that his all-consuming second love, his passion, was the grooming and abuse of underage victims, right? Of girls, children. And this was a fact that remained an open secret in high society for a number of years. Of course, longtime listeners, you have already heard the quote where Donald Trump says, no doubt about it, Jeffrey likes him young, or something like that, right?
Yeah, he says he's a great guy, something mm-hmm. like that.
And then later, he denies it and says he didn't know the guy. He didn't, you know, he's distancing himself, which a lot of people do. So this open secret hit the headlines due to excellent reporting from the Miami Herald. And in 2008, Epstein ended up pleading guilty to a felony charge that was put in a way that really was profoundly offensive toward the victim, who again was a child. This guy didn't get child abuse, not get, sexual assault of a minor. He got solicitation of prostitution involving a minor, which implicitly states that the victim was somehow a sex worker. Let's think about how messed up that is. He was sentenced to 18 months in prison. This is also, by the way, a country where, due to drug laws, people with nonviolent crimes have been sentenced to life. I want to point that out. And if 18 months, if you're one of the type of people who listens to this and says, well, abusing a child sexually should not, that's steep for abusing a child. Well, first things first, go ahead and don't ever listen to our show again and don't email us. I don't want to hear from you. But while you're in this episode, you'll be delighted to know, if you're that type of person, that he only served 13 of those months. He also barely served those. He had work release. He created his own office building, which is something you can do when you're that wealthy. He would commute to his office outside of jail 6 days a week. He did, boo-hoo-hoo, have to register as a sex offender. This did not stop him from continuing his crimes. He had a non-prosecution agreement that was largely considered a sick joke. I would say largely and accurately considered a sick joke.
Yeah, listen to our first episode to hear all the details on that.
Right. And the guy who greenlit this, a fellow named Acosta, said he was told Epstein was, quote, with intelligence and therefore untouchable. So Acosta very much threw his hands up, passed the buck, and said it was, you know, it's – it's above me. I can't do this. I can't make a call.
And that whole connection of Jeffrey Epstein to some form or some kind of intelligence, either agency or group, is something we've speculated on before. Who knows? Who knows what that actually means?
Again, we have to hang on for the second act because we're just in the facts.
We're in the facts, but that connection that was made by Acosta has stood out this whole time, and people continue to just wonder about it. We don't know.
We don't know, but we do know that he got arrested again and appeared to stick. Right in July of 2019, he was arrested. This time in New Jersey, same sort of initial charges. He was denied bail. He was imprisoned, and in August, he died.
Yes, on Saturday, August 10th, 2019, Jeffrey Epstein was found unresponsive in his jail cell at 6:30 a.m. Eastern Time. He was in New York City, and the official verdict that came through after the immediate investigation was completed, it was that he had killed himself, that he had hanged himself there in his cell.
Mm-hmm. Hanged himself to death. That was the official verdict, but it turns out there is much, much, much more to this story, and we'll delve into it after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy.
Now, since our last two episodes aired, the death of Jeffrey Epstein has become a bit of a meme, and let's go ahead and talk about something that occurred very recently on cable news just to kind of illustrate this. So on Saturday, November 2nd, a man named Mike Ritland, a former Navy SEAL, and he's the founder of Warrior Dog Foundation. He was a guest on Fox News, a program called Waters World, and he went on the show to discuss how the United States military uses dogs, something we've talked about pretty recently on this show. Specifically, they're talking about all these stories that had come out about Conan, the canine that was involved in the special operations mission that resulted in the death of the ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And right at the end of the statement, Ritland, the guest on the show, he gave a statement, a PSA of sorts, discouraging citizens, just everyday people like you and me, from adopting former military dogs. And at the end of his message, he slipped in a little something extra, and I'm going to read the quote here. The remarkable nature of these dogs and them being highlighted in the news creates a huge demand by people that frankly shouldn't have them. If you see the coverage and you decide, I want one of these dogs, either buy a fully trained and finished dog from a professional or just don't get one at all. And Epstein didn't kill himself. Now this right here, this whole thing where there's a fairly long statement, then finishing with, and Epstein didn't kill himself, has become a meme. You'll see them all over the internet. And it's the big question is why? Why are so many people interested in continuing this conversation, or at least not letting it get out of the news or out of people's minds that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself?
Yeah. Why did this one person's death spawn a meme, right?
Yeah.
Because we've seen the death of other serial abusers, like the overrated DJ from the United Kingdom, Jimmy Savile, right? That guy, clearly a monster. There was an ongoing child abuse cover-up in the United Kingdom. And I don't mean to sound as though I know I made an offhand derogatory remark about the royal family, and now I'm talking about the cover-up that the UK is currently embroiled in. Yeah. I don't mean to pick on the UK. Those are just – it is true that there was this active cover-up, and there was a similar case of a very well-connected criminal committing similar acts. But why did Epstein spawn the meme? Well, that's primarily due to the shady circumstances surrounding his death. We'd like to give you some updates because when we initially investigated this, we were working with immediate reports and headlines, and there hadn't been a lot of delving into the facts. So here are some of the crazier things that happened. First, the guards and the cameras. It turns out cameras were no help in figuring out exactly what had happened to Jeffrey Epstein. Neither were the guards. The pair tasked with watching Epstein were, according to the official story, literally asleep on their job. They were also – he was held in this special housing unit called 9 South. The guards who were charged with keeping track of him have been accused of falsely recording in a log that they had checked on him every 30 minutes as was required. So they have been cooking the books. His roommate was also pulled from the cell in the days leading up to his death. He was also taken off suicide watch shortly before his death after an alleged suicide attempt on July 23rd, which is itself murky because if you look at the reports, he was apparently shouting on that during that alleged suicide attempt. In August, the Department of Justice, August 2019, this is the Department of Justice, began to subpoena multiple members of the prison staff, anywhere from 15 to 20. So for some people, it would be, I don't want to say inspiring, but reassuring that the murder was being investigated at the highest levels of the law. However, there's a problem with that investigation.
Oh, there's a big problem. The DOJ, the Department of Justice, is headed by a gentleman named William Barr that you may have heard of previously because he's been a bit controversial. This is a gentleman whose opponents allege was appointed entirely based on his earlier stated refusal to prosecute a standing president of basically anything. We were referencing Donald Trump there. Well, Ben, why don't you actually take us down the rabbit hole here, because there's something about his father that was a bit fishy that we found.
Sure. William Barr's father is a gentleman named Donald Barr. Donald Barr was also a teacher at the Dalton School. He left 3 months before Epstein began, and you will hear many, many people say that he had a hand in the hiring of Jeffrey Epstein, who was by many accounts a well-liked teacher. Barr left due to his authoritarian stance. Other members of the faculty thought he was coming down too hard on kids who use drugs. He is also the author of a book called, get ready for this, Space Relations, colon, a slightly gothic interplanetary tale. According to its critics, this book more or less smacks of pedophilia. At this point, it isn't conclusively proven whether Barr had any genuine, concrete, significant role in hiring Epstein, but it's enough of a tenuous link, or some might call it a coincidence, to send Levelhead spinning toward conspiratorial territory. There's an interesting and remarkably lazy Vice article that is – it's about this. It's written by someone who has a copy of this book, Space Relations by Donald Barr, and they've read it. They make no bones about it not being particularly good and about how it's highly unsettling. I'll read an excerpt here if that's okay from this Vice article. It says, quote, depicts the rape of enslaved people, especially teenage girls, and other coercive sex acts for the dual purposes of entertainment and controlled procreation. Then Barr – and then goes on to say how Barr resigned from his position as headmaster of Dalton in 1974 due to disagreements with trustees. And the author, to their credit, goes on – the author of the Vice article, not the author of Space Relations, goes on to say that they've tried to find interviews with Barr that might clarify his inspiration for the novel. But this journalist, Becky Ferreira, says that the only thing they could find pertaining to this was a 1986 essay that Donald Barr wrote for New York Times about ideal books for young readers. Quote, adolescence appears to be a relatively modern invention, Barr opines, and the romantic wretchedness of it appears to be more modern still. Author goes on to say, by far the most disgusting aspect of the novel is its fixation on sexualizing adolescence and its depictions of sexual abuse. So I want to go back and say the reason that I called this article a bit lazy is not because of the journalism involved in the actual content of the Vice article. I think it's well written. I think it's well done, and it's a good thing to read to see a critical approach to this. But in a headline grabby way, they use this headline. Ready? Epstein truthers are obsessed with a sci-fi book about child sex slavery written by Bill Barr's dad. Now, I don't know whether this journalist gets to choose their own headlines. Oftentimes, you know, it's not uncommon for journalists to not be able to do that. But it is an interesting choice to call someone an Epstein truther because that kind of thought-terminating cliche makes people immediately assume that anyone who believes Jeffrey Epstein did not commit suicide is on the level of what?
Oh, yes. You're referring to 9/11 truthers. I see what you're doing there, Ben.
Oh, I'm not doing it. The Vice article I know. Yeah.
But there's also a thing to say here that just because Donald Barr writes a book that includes those kinds of things doesn't mean that is necessarily the way he thinks or the way he feels, even though there are, you know, you read a quote there that seemed to be concerning. But, you know.
That's true.
We just have to remember that. Like,
it's a rabbit
creation
hole.
Is create or like, you know, if you're creating something in that way, it doesn't mean you necessarily believe it is something you're writing.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
Not saying it stands true in this case.
No. And I'm not saying it's anything more than a very creepy coincidence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because again, that's a work of fiction and this is a tenuous relationship through a school. This is not the same thing as, you know, those pictures of the UK Prince Andrew or the video footage of him hanging out with Epstein or having Epstein leaving his own house with a very young girl followed by the UK's Prince Andrew closing the door behind them in Epstein's house, which is true. You can see that video footage. Even BBC covered it. But – I want to stick with that sort of lazy thinking, the use of the word truther there, because we'd like to introduce you to a probably one of the most famous truthers in recent Epstein reporting and one of the reasons we decided to make this update. We'll do that after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Ben, you talking about Mayor Bill de Blasio? Because he came forward and said, hey, there's something fishy going on here just the other day.
Okay, yeah. So he is an Epstein truther then, right?
He at least thinks there needs to be a further investigation to figure out how he died in that controlled facility. And it wasn't caught on camera, and people just don't understand what happened.
And some people have argued that it's really – it's not indicative of a conspiracy to commit homicide so much as it's indicative of a very dangerous state of disrepair for the prison involved, and then prisons throughout New York, and then prisons throughout the U.S.
Yeah, if the highest levels here were a multimillionaire – is locked up in one of these places, and he can still die, whether by his own hand or someone else's, without anyone knowing what happened, we're in trouble.
And prison guards apparently at that facility had to work routine overtime. It was expected, right? And it was part of the job to work more hours than you had signed on to work for. You know, the Epstein truther that we would like to introduce you to, or another one we'd like to introduce you to, is a fellow named Dr. Michael Baden. At this stage of the investigation, they've entered into what we could call the autopsy debate, autopsy wars, if we wanted to be hyperbolic in our headlines.
And Dr. Michael Baden was there when the autopsy was performed.
And he's a former New York City medical examiner. Here's where we
go. Very, very briefly former.
Yes.
Ex-medical examiner for New York City.
So the argument for suicide, as we've laid out in other in an earlier episode, in our August episode, and you know, as you've seen laid out in multiple media iterations, is that Epstein took his own life via hanging. And according to Dr. Barbara Sampson, quote, the original medical investigation was thorough and complete. There is no reason for a second medical investigation by our office. However, hold the phone, enter player two in this game. There's an argument for homicide made by this Dr. Michael Baden. And what do you mean when you say he was very briefly former?
Oh, well, there's a fantastic New York Times article about this called Epstein's Autopsy Points to Homicide, Pathologist Hired by Brother Claims. And if you can get access to this article, if you've only read a few NYT articles this week or this month or whatever, I'd recommend you do it. But anyway, so what Dr. Baden is saying here is that because of the broken bones in Jeffrey Epstein's neck, there were three of them, he's saying that because of these, he believes that the death was homicide rather than suicide because in the 50 years – this is a quote. I've not seen in 50 years where that occurred in a suicidal hanging case. That's the big mention here. And there's also something to be said here about how Dr. Baden was hired by Epstein's brother to do kind of a separate investigation or to get more of a spotlight on the autopsy process and what happened so that the family would actually have eyes in the room as the autopsy is being performed.
Right.
And, you know, to have somebody who's been working for five decades as, you know, a medical examiner for various people, as a high-level consultant for various people within this field, having it come from him holds a lot of weight. But there is something a little weird about Dr. Baden.
What's that, Matt?
He was on the O.J. Simpson trial. He was a witness, and he was at least an expert witness, I guess.
Sure.
Where he brought about the idea, or spoke to the idea, that O.J. Simpson could not have performed these murders because the timeline didn't match up, and he was panned pretty heavily for his statements during that trial.
He's also married to Linda Kenny Baden, who was one of Phil Spector's primary attorneys during his murder trial.
Wow.
So,
And that's not to say that he is not correct here in his assessment that the three broken bones within the neck, it feels fishy.
Yeah.
And it holds weight coming from an expert like him. But that fact, at least connecting those broken bones to a definite homicide, has been refuted by both Dr. Barbara Sampson, that we mentioned earlier, as well as several other people who are high-level medical examiners.
Right. It's specifically two fractures on the left and right side of the larynx, and then one fracture on the left hyoid bone, which, as we described earlier, hangs above your Adam's apple if you have one of those. And he said they occur much more commonly in homicidal strangulation. The thing that's also that we also have to add to the cauldron here that we have stewing is that, honestly, I hate to say it, but when the surviving relative or loved one of someone who passes away has a hired gun come in like this, you have to be very careful because it's very easy to cast aspersions on their credibility. You know what I mean?
Sure. And you also have to remember that that person who was hired is being hired specifically by a loved one to tell them maybe what they want to hear.
That's going to always be the question. That's going to be a little bit of the elephant in the room. One of the bigger elephants in the room, of course, we are bound to mention this. When I say bound, I mean in the sense of we cannot talk about this without also exploring the ultimate question, who benefits?
Yeah.
We won't know who benefits. Why would someone kill Jeffrey Epstein if it wasn't him, if he didn't do it? And right now, this has become one of the most widely believed or circulated conspiracy theories in the American zeitgeist. Like, it's up there with questions about JFK, right?
It is. Well, and it's both very serious in some corners, and it's also a big joke in other corners of the internet.
Which is so American.
It really is. So let's just talk about the first category that we talked about a little bit in the last episode, and that would be patrons of Jeffrey Epstein and people who may have been complicit with some of the sexual abuse that was occurring, or people that may have taken part in that or helped him get away with it. Or maybe people that were, again, this is complete speculation, but maybe people that were being blackmailed by Epstein because they did take a part. Or at least we're feeling vulnerable because Epstein was going back to jail and he could tell the stories, right? And a part of this, or someone who's been caught up in some of these theories, is Hillary Rodham Clinton. And one of the main reasons behind that is because of another conspiracy theory we talked about, the Clinton body count. And if you go on Twitter, you can find hashtag Clinton body count. It still exists.
Real quick, the idea for that, for anyone who is unfamiliar, is that during their rise to political primacy, or during their creation of a political dynasty, the Clinton family, through a series of different scenarios and events, is accused of murdering multiple people.
Or at least having them killed.
Or having them killed. Yeah, that's what I mean. Not necessarily like them. Not a situation where like Bill Clinton sits on all fours and then Hillary Clinton pushes someone over him. And I'm not making light of it, but it's for people who believe in that, it goes back to shady real estate dealings pre-presidency, and it still has a lot of supporters. Every time it seems to die down, it is resurrected by something that is portrayed as another related murder.
And we have a whole episode on that. You can find it in your podcast player
somewhere.
Do we? Yeah, we did it around the last election in 2016.
Oh, I thought it was just Clinton conspiracies.
It was, but we brought up the body count in there as well.
As we did.
But yes, so just recently, Hillary Rodham Clinton and her daughter that she has with Bill Clinton went on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. And Trevor Noah said, "Now I have to ask you a question that's been plaguing me for a while. How did you kill Jeffrey Epstein?" And again, it's a joke. It is a joke, but it is also very serious, and it's strange that on a big stage like that, on The Daily Show, that it can just be joked about. Anyway, we don't have to get too far into it. It's just that is still in the zeitgeist. And a lot of this also has to do with Bill Clinton's definite companionship of some sort with Jeffrey Epstein. We didn't even really talk about that much. You mentioned it up top, but
usage of the private jet, the plane logs, the flight logs are one of the big things powering this, because they are proof that people hopped on the jet. Sometimes does that mean that they were, you know, arm in arm with Epstein every time they were on the jet? No.
No.
But does it mean they used it? Yeah, that's exactly what it means. Donald Trump did not escape unscathed through this. He had, despite his very par for the course for the guy, for a lot of politicians, but par for the course especially for him, despite his statements that directly contradict one another over time, he clearly had a connection with Epstein via Mar-a-Lago. You can also see another hashtag that you had mentioned to me off air, Matt, that is hashtag Trump body count. Other question, relatives. Would relatives have had him done away with? Would it be people after his finances? Would it be an intelligence agency? Because I would like to spend some time investigating this fact. Numerous very successful intelligence agencies use these honeypot tactics, right?
Where you'd have somebody like a Jeffrey Epstein that would lure in powerful or influential people to do some of these acts, right?
Right, a procurer. And we've talked about this at length. It is willfully, cartoonishly, I would argue offensively ignorant to pretend that there is, for some reason, an intelligence agency that would not immediately do this if they had the means and they thought it was worth it. The intelligence agencies that Epstein has been accused of acting as a middleman for are primarily going to be the CIA, Mossad, and Her Majesty's Service in the UK, one of the MIs. This is strange because there are people who will tell you with certitude that he was an intelligence agent or an intelligence associate. However, if you look at the way a lot of those agencies work, especially – or those institutions, I should say, work, especially when they're doing something that is illegal, according to the laws of their own country, what you see is that the line between agent or operative or asset gets kind of murky, right? There's – because we have separation of church and state here in the US, but we don't have separation of business and state, and we never will. Just because it's too difficult to do, and there's too much money on the table for people to lose if private interests are not able to influence the workings of government more than, you know, more than your vote ever will.
Oh yeah. Well, and this connection just, I think objectively, makes a lot of sense when you think about that non-prosecution agreement that he got, where it was stated he was connected to intelligence, and then to have him be so protected for so long.
It's not stated in the agreement either. The only proof of that is a statement from Acosta. However, I do want to continue with one last point. Why would a financier, someone who thrives on the movement of other people's money and therefore on some level needs people to know what they're doing and they're good at it, why would someone like that ever – not disclose their clients? One thing, and I'm not saying this is the case, but one thing that a lot of front companies for intelligence agencies do is they receive seed funding, or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or they have clients with terribly innocuous, poorly written names like Generic America Incorporated, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or Good People for Wholesome Times, LLC, things like that, you know? And that's who ends up funding the junta, or that's who ends up, you know, procuring the guns to cross the border at night.
Exactly.
So I could see his primary, you know, he needs to say he has clients, they need to be closely guarded, but what if ultimately his checks are not getting cut by people at Victoria's Secret or, you know, dissipated aristocrats? What if his checks are ultimately getting cut by state actors?
Ugh.
It's not impossible. And then, of course, there's the tragedy of what happens to the money. It doesn't seem like very much of that is going to his victims. Then there's the idea that Epstein did not actually die, but rather committed pseudocide, which is a real word, the act of faking one's death, and that he has been aided and abetted in his escape. Most of the theories there are based on interpretations of some grainy pictures of the corpse and saying that the corpse doesn't match the pictures of the living guy.
Well, yeah, and another meme that's out there is, where is Jeffrey Epstein's body? And, you know, people wanting to see it, just like when Osama bin Laden was killed or not killed. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of conspiracy theories proliferate. We've also just – I wanted to mention here before we end that the people of We Are Change, Luke Radowski, and this other YouTube channel, The Dollar Vigilante, they took a boat and got onto – that island, mm-hmm. that private island. Mm-hmm. And you can watch those right now, where you can actually see some of the...
Can you see the temple?
You can see they go up to the temple, yeah. And they like touch the wall and everything. They see some of the private massage areas that are still there. And the island is still run by, I guess, staff that are out there on the island.
Do they speak with the staff?
No, but they get chased off by somebody in a golf cart.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're going to say on a goat.
On a goat cart. No, it was a golf cart, but it was very odd. The videos themselves are, I don't want to say self-aggrandizing, but
sure.
It's, you know, I would say watch the videos for the footage, maybe mute it if you have to, but I'm not saying that videos are bad. It's just the images are more compelling than anything.
Understood. And thank you for pointing that out, Matt. Today concludes our episode, but not our show, and maybe regretfully not our series on Epstein. Each time we end one of these, we know that there will be more to the story because this is an ongoing event. As always, the most important takeaway from any episode like this does not relate to these people you've never met. It relates to you and your loved ones. If you or someone you know is a victim of sexual abuse, abuse of any sort, you know, you are not alone. We have, as a species, set up resources 24/7. You can call. It's just an internet search away. There is help. There are people waiting to help you. And at this point, it is perhaps disingenuous to say that we are really – it's perhaps disingenuous to say we're ending the episode or we're ending the story. We're ending the episode, but we're pausing the story, and we must make no mistake, this is quickly developing into one of the most widely believed conspiracy theories in the Western zeitgeist. But what's your take? We want to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. If you are a person given to Facebookery, then why not visit one of our favorite pages on Mark Zuckerberg's Sandbox, our community page, Here's Where It Gets Crazy. You can see some of those actually increasingly clever Epstein memes that Matt mentioned earlier. They're quickly becoming the new Rickroll, I think, or will be for a bit.
Oh, yes, very much so. In fact, just to feel a little more lighthearted, I want to read one of these. Is that okay?
For sure.
Here's one that we found posted, and it's got a picture of the ring from Lord of the Rings. It says, "One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and Epstein didn't kill himself." I found that to be particularly interesting there.
I'll do one as well here.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you know you can make biodegradable and renewable confetti using a hole punch and leaves for parties and weddings? This is used as an alternative to plastic confetti that ends up in landfills or the ocean, and Epstein did not kill himself.
And here's the last one. Actually, Ben, you read this one too, because I like the way you read that one. Can you read that, by the way? It's got some odd colors.
In the same voice?
Sure. I mean, or maybe British.
Add a tablespoon of vanilla to a gallon of paint before you paint your home. It will not affect the paint color and will make your house smell of vanilla. When your family smells all your creativity, they will realize that Epstein did not kill himself and was murdered to prevent his testimony against elite pedophiles. Oh, wow.
I particularly like the flow of that one.
Well, do people really put vanilla in the paint?
I don't know, Paul. You tell me. Paul shared that with us. We'll find out.
Vanilla in the paint. That's where we end. What do you think? This has been a hot topic of debate in the conspiracy realist circles.
Yeah, I would say I'm surprised by how many people just all out believe that he did not kill himself.
Yeah, even people who would normally be a little more on the skeptical side of things.
All right. And again, you can call us also, by the way, we didn't even mention that yet. You can call 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message. We'll hear it. It might get on the air on an episode coming up. And if you don't want to do any of that stuff, you can leave us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.